Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, it is my privilege to welcome a very, very senior professional from London who has worked all over the world, a former colleague from ITC, Naresh Sethi. Naresh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ashutosh.
Naresh is the chairman of VST Industries in India. He's a special advisor to Salesforce. He is the only Indian or Asian who has been as a member of the Executive Board of Management of British American Tobacco, or BAT. He was the CEO and president of BAT Japan. He's a champion and very passionate about business and digital transformation. And he has led over 70 countries as marketing director or CEO. Naresh, that's quite an incredible achievement. So what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Firstly, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Ashutosh. Three milestones. First, of course, a plug-in for my sponsors. Mm-hmm. The first milestone is my wife and my daughter. Mm-hmm. They've been life-changing for me. And if you talk to my friends who've known me a long time, they tell me that I'm a much more tolerable person now, thanks to the impact of these two women in my life.
Wonderful.
So that's been fundamental. The second milestone is more business. It was my stint as CEO of Japan and facing the tsunami and the aftermath of tsunami, both a very, very tough to take event, as well as some of the most inspiring moments of my professional career. On the one hand, we had the impact of the earthquake and didn't know what will happen to the nuclear reactors in Fukushima. Supply chains were destroyed.
Right.
So you had to sit back and say, how do we as a company respond to our responsibility as a social citizen, as well as how to keep the business going.
Right.
So unlike many expats, I did not leave the country. I stayed back. And what a resilient company we proved to be. We did our bit for society. And that year, we tripled our profits.
Wow.
Who says both can be achieved together?
Mm-hmm.
And the third event, I think you hinted at it already, was to become the first Indian and Asian to ever be on the management board of BAT. And together as a team, we took it from about 40, 50 billion market cap to close to above 100 billion pound market cap at one point in time.
I wanted to talk much more about your career, but given the fact that you are so passionate about the digital world, and not too many CEOs in the world are very passionate about digital, they leave it to their CIO. Tell me what really spurred your passion for digital, and how is this changing the industry?
I thought I was very tech oriented. Every new device, a new thing that's happening around us, I'll be the go-to guy for people. And I thought that I was pretty much contemporary and keeping up with times.
True.
Till I started to read a bit. And I realized that I didn't know much. And then I dived about 5-6 years ago and to talk to anybody who would care to talk back, and reading as much or whosoever recommended something to understand for myself. And I tell you, there are exciting times ahead.
Correct.
And I'm extremely, you're right, passionate about this. I feel like a child. I think the next 20 years, we are not going to recognize, how life has changed. For us as individuals, for our society, for our politics, and therefore, for every industry, every business that there is to talk about. Nothing would be left untouched. And I don't like to call it a digital revolution. I prefer, Klaus Schwab's terminology used at the World Economic Forum many years ago, the fourth industrial revolution. And before it starts to become all, crazy talk, Let's just go back 15 years, Ashutosh.
Correct.
There was no iPhone.
Yeah.
Google was just a baby. Mm. We didn't know what to do about it. Mm. Amazon was just a river somewhere in South America. Mm. Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat were words that would be rejected on a Scrabble board.
Correct.
Alexa and Siri were decent names for other people's children.
Okay.
Right? Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about how we live our lives today. Mm. Think about this COVID pandemic. Mm. Without a mobile phone, without Zoom, and without WhatsApp. Mm. How many changes we have experienced without realizing. Mm. And this is still a very small part of the revolution that excites me.
Okay.
Okay. This is a weak trailer of a blockbuster movie.
Amazing. Yeah.
So what is it that we are talking about? Mm. I think the simple driver is that the speed and capacity of computing has been doubling every year for many, many years now.
Okay.
Okay. Moore's Law. Mm. And today, we have reached such capabilities and speed of computing that things that were science fiction are now becoming reality.
Wow.
Mm. So machine learning, artificial intelligence, 3D printing, robotics, blockchain, virtual reality, augmented reality, they're all being made possible because of the speed of computing at the same price or at cheaper prices actually. Mm. And this will bring about a fundamental change to everything we do. Biotech and infotech are now merging.
Right.
You can use CRISPR for gene editing now. Mm. For the first time, we are talking about digitizing the human brain.
Correct.
Right. We are talking of increasing human lifespan from anywhere from 125 to 150 years.
Incredible.
Mm. Because the simple rule is, if you can digitize something, it gets dematerialized, it gets demonetized, and it gets democratized.
Fantastic. Give me an example.
So, simple example. Let's take music. From cassette tapes to CDs, you've digitized your music. So it's become dematerialized. Now, I don't have to make copies of CDs, right?
Yep.
It's been demonetized. The cost of giving the same music to the next person is now zero.
Right.
And it's been democratized. Now we're not borrowing cassette tapes or CDs from each other. We are talking about iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, etc. for music. Now imagine this happening in industry after industry, in area after area, and the power of computing is making it happen. There's no field, no function that'll remain untouched. And what you just said is also very interesting. I do not think that the senior management teams, I'm talking the two topmost layers, get this. They're too busy, you know, with their quarterly results, their half yearly, their annual results, etc. You know, running fast and fast on the same treadmill to actually visualize this world 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Okay. And what they see, they react to. And by the time you see something in a world that's growing exponentially, which is doubling every year, it's too late.
Amazing.
So my biggest fear is that 10 years from now, Kodak will not be the only case study that we'll be teaching in colleges.
So, you know, Naresh, when I was reading about you and the incredible experience you've had and the number of brands you have built everywhere, I thought I must ask you this question. You know, what goes into building a successful brand? And a follow-up question is that how have you seen branding evolve since you left IIM Calcutta?
I'll take the second question first.
Okay.
Because you're making me, you know, go all romantic when I think of the great old days of brand marketing. And I tell you, Ashutosh, we had it easy. Life was simple.
Yeah.
you used communications, advertising, and lifestyle as your primary weapon of choice.
Hmm.
It was brands that led and defined consumers.
Hmm.
We told you when you were going to be the ideal parent, the ideal mom, dad, you know, when you're going to be, how you can be more attractive, more powerful, et cetera, et cetera.
Hmm.
Those days are now long gone.
Correct.
Now it is consumers who are the driver's seat. They are leading and defining what brands are.
Correct.
And that's a whole different ballgame.
Hmm.
And consumers, for the first time, you know, the source of awareness and trial for brands is not advertising, billboards, TV ads, etc., etc.
Hmm.
It is my friends and family told me or heard from social media.
Hmm.
And now we have a much bigger set of friends and family thanks to WhatsApp and the various communities we
Absolutely.
Are in.
Absolutely, yes.
Right? With a click of a few buttons on Google, brands stand exposed.
Correct.
Okay?
Yeah.
The second thing that consumers are now demanding is, what has this brand done for me lately?
Mm.
What is this brand doing as a citizen?
Mm.
Is it as worried about the sustainability of this planet?
Mm.
Is the purpose of this brand just to make money and give it to shareholders?
Mm.
And what is the company doing that actually is communicating, advertising these brands? Because consumers are very cynical about what companies say about their brands. They would rather believe a young founder and startup with their claims than any big company.
Mm.
And they're very eager to try out new things. It's a new thing that's happening.
Yeah.
And not without reason. Not without good reason.
Mm.
I'll give you an example and also how it's been fixed.
Mm.
You know, Unilever was promoting Dove to celebrate womanhood.
Correct.
And as a force against body shaming and stereotyping women.
Right.
The same company consumers found was also promoting Axe deodorant, which was objectifying women.
Correct.
We've all seen those ads.
Yeah.
In closer home in India, one of the biggest sellers and profit earners was a cream called Fair and Lovely.
Lovely, yeah.
It was reinforcing social stereotypes.
Mm.
So consumers are looking at these three contrasting things coming from the same company.
Correct.
Unilever has been extremely brave.
Mm.
They have fixed this.
Mm.
And they will reap the benefits with time to come.
I agree.
But most companies look the other way. It's in the too hard basket. Mm. And let's take the returns here and now, and move.
And let someone else handle it.
So, once my term is over. Right. And so this is how I think the relationship with consumers has completely shifted.
Mm.
But I think brands will always be relevant, forever and ever. And I believe in the future, brands have to stand for ideas and ideals.
I agree.
What new things you do and what you stand for.
Mm.
And when you talk about ideas, it's high time we actually started to be authentic and started to actually listen to consumers.
Mm.
Their subtle hints at what they would prefer to sense and respond. Now you have a database of millions of consumers.
Mm.
Do something with that database and respond.
Okay.
You know, the interesting thing, Japan is a very innovative country. All of us know that.
Mm.
But they have no single word for innovation.
Wow.
The closest we come to is a word that says to make it better.
Amazing.
It's continuous improvement. Mm. I listen to you. I find you would like to do this thing slightly differently, a bit more. Over a period of time, you'll see a fundamental change in the product offering.
Wow.
But there's also in FMCG world, there's also always a limit to, product innovation.
Mm.
You first had twin blade razors, then you have three, then you have four, then you have five. And where does it stop?
Yeah.
So it's not just products. You've got to start thinking of business models because in came Dollar Shave Company that said, you know what? 2-3 blades is enough. We'll give you a high quality shave on a subscription basis, whether it's monthly or bi-monthly deliveries, whatever you want. And guess what? It's at a price that you're not paying for the sponsorship of Roger Federer. And it takes off.
Amazing.
All of us know there's a another example. This is exciting. There's a problem in urban areas with busy parents, you know, and ready to eat meals. But this business never took off really to the extent of its potential. You know, heat and eat, you buy something, and it didn't really take off. In comes a Deliveroo, a Swiggy, or an Uber Eats that says, you know what? I know the need. The business model is, I'll bring any restaurant of your choice to your doorstep in 30 to 45 minutes. So ideas are not just product, but also could be something else. And ideas, I think I've hinted enough. You know,
I agree.
So you as a corporate citizen.
Correct. So Naresh, you spoke about the ideas and the ideals of brands, but the consumer is also changing dramatically. And I'm referring to the millennials and the Gen Zs. You have worked with them for a long time. How do you see them making a change to companies, brands, to because of the digital community? They are people who've been born into the digital world.
Yeah. You know, talking about millennials and Gen Z was a big fad in the corporate world and lots was written. But I don't think we actually internalized what it meant for a long, long time. If I have to be honest. And countries like India, the average age is 29. If you don't listen to Gen Z or millennials, you know, do it at your own peril. But let's try to understand what these people bring first, right? And where the conflict lies. This generation was born digital. They know no other way. And they are also born collaborators. And they like co-creating. You know, they've gone through university on WhatsApp, Slack, Google Docs, always co-creating, right? And to an extent, we have to remember, no matter how we stereotype them, they adapt to change much better than you and me. And they like new things, new ideas. They're far more resilient. And they still keep that bit of idealism in them in the beginning years, right? And they are worried about the sustainability of the planet. They are worried about the future. They would like to associate themselves with a company that has a purpose beyond making money for shareholders.
Correct.
Right. Correct. Now, they walk into a big organization and it's like a cold shower. Here are my systems. Here are my processes. Here is the lane that I'm going to put you on. Follow that guy. And one day if you do well, you'll be the leader and there'll be somebody else behind you in that lane. So let me teach you. You know, the sausage machine is absolutely rejected. There are many more opportunities for these people. They are not leaving because they're fickle, what people would like to say. They're leaving because you cannot hold on to them.
Correct.
My view is don't teach them. Inspire them to learn on the job. Give them variety of projects. Give them projects where there are lots more people, including some seniors who can become their coaches and mentors. Keep them interested and ask them questions. Ask for their advice. Just because they are at the bottom end of the, you know, of the ladder doesn't make them any less important.
Correct.
But I'll tell you, when I got into this digital transformation stuff and said, this is fascinating. I spoke to a lot of any company that was willing to talk to me, whether it was Google, whether it was Microsoft, whether it was Fujitsu, whether it was the Accentures of the world. And then I hit upon a reverse mentor, a 26, 27-year-old Chinese girl from Accenture. She would talk and she would demonstrate to me and I would sit and take notes. She set up her own company. And now it's, the beauty is we now have a symbiotic relationship, but I have been the net beneficiary of this relationship.
I agree with you. I agree. I mean, I have also had a, you know, not one, but two or three mentors who are in their early 20s and the amount I've learned from them is amazing.
Fantastic.
So I'm going to now move on. We've got time for two more questions for you.
Right.
My next question is on failure. I've often said this, that parents in South Asia or Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. You know, I have a new book coming out on 18th of March on failure.
All right.
And, you know, basically, you know, because we've never been taught that it's okay to fail, it manifests itself in our behavior pattern. So I'll have three cars in three lanes, but 9 cars are the traffic light because everyone wants to be first. And so on and so forth. Hundreds of examples. Yet we fail. So my question to you is, what has Naresh's learnings been from your mistakes?
It's a fascinating question. And I look forward to your book, by the way. Because I think not acknowledging failures, the worst thing is if you're a child who has succeeded in a few things.
Mm.
Because that is celebrated and it's an OTT celebration.
Correct.
Right? And I found myself in a situation where I was good at a few things that I did, you know, in school.
Mm.
And that was being celebrated all around. Mm. And guess what?
Mm.
I stopped trying new things.
Mm.
Because when you start trying new things, you're going to suck at it for the first 3, 4, 6, 8, 12 months. But no, I have to be great at anything that I do.
Right.
So that's being celebrated.
Yeah.
And it took me probably 20 years, actually, to get off this particular mindset and to say, I'm going to enjoy doing stuff. Even if I suck at it, I'm actually going to build up and learn something
Correct.
New.
Correct.
So that's, I think, a very profound thing that you just said. I'm not ducking your key question okay. about the mistakes I made, right? Easy to blame others for all the issues.
We all make mistakes.
I think, you know, I forgive myself my early amateurish mistakes when I was growing up in the company. The worst thing happened when, call it, I was about 10, 15 years into the business.
Mm-hmm.
I'd worked in India, Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia. I was looking after over 20 markets of West Africa. Mm-hmm. And I started to get the feeling, I know it all.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people in the underdeveloped, developing, developed world. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So when my teams came to me with thoughts or questions or ideas, say, stop. I already know the answer. Right? Elementary, Dr. Watson. Accepting. Sherlock Holmes is a fictional character.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. And I learned the hard way, you know, time and time again, not listening to your teams, not listening to your consumers, you know, is a huge issue. I had 2 massive, expensive new brand launch failures in Japan. My first year as a CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big shock to take.
Mm.
And then I said, okay, I know what I'm doing wrong.
Mm.
You know, I have to learn to listen, digest, and then respond.
Okay.
Right? Internalize, then respond. You know, this cowboy approach is not going to work.
Mm.
So I did a video with Japanese subtitles, sent it to everyone in the company, and also played it again for good measure in an annual conference. Basically saying, I'm sorry. I'm responsible for these 2 very expensive failures. And this is why I think these brand launches failed.
Mm.
But more importantly, these are my promises on what I'm going to do differently and why we'll be successful the next time.
Amazing.
And the response that I got from the company, and this is a Japanese company, remember, right? Who are not the most expressive people in the world, but trust me.
Correct.
The response I got back from the company, reps emailing me, you know, upwards, just reinforced that I was doing the right thing.
Amazing.
And once there's a positive reinforcement loop, hopefully it starts to become second nature to you as time goes on.
Fabulous. So now, I'm going to ask you my last question. I could love talking to you just for a long time. You have now reached the very apex, you know, and I'm sure there is much more ahead of you.
Yeah.
This question is for the thousands of young people who will be starting off on their journey in the corporate world. What would your advice be to them?
First piece of advice. is don't define yourself just through your job. You have not been placed on this planet to increase the profits of a big organization. Be a successful human being.
Correct.
Okay, so be very passionate about what you do in your job, but that's not the be all and end all. Have some perspective. The second advice is what I call, the mighty pyramid of Giza. In your early years, do not chase that promotion and a salary increase. Keep a broad base. Chase experiences. Move laterally. Learn. Ask why. Do different things in the first 4 or 5 years of your company. You'll realize that you're a very different person compared to your other peers. And then you rise very quickly at the top. And like the pyramids, you stay there for a long time. Many people end up hitting a glass ceiling in middle management. And what I'd like to tell these young people is, in the beginning, it's acquiring technical skills. And later on, it's acquiring people, leadership skills, envisioning skills, etc. These latter skills you don't get by following the leader in your organization. So back to advice number one, have a life outside work.
Very well said.
Pursue hobbies. Don't give up on them. Don't be so time poor. Spend time with friends, family, meet new people. Get yourself a mentor.
Correct.
Right? Don't just put your CV on LinkedIn and sit back. You know, ask people. Keep asking questions. And you'll become a very different personality that will show up in your workplace. And you'll be surprised why you're being found as the one who's more successful than others.
Amazing. Naresh, it has been such a fascinating conversation. I loved your four D's. D's is digitize, dematerialize, democratize, demonetize. You know, amazing kind of a concept, and I'm sure I'll use it again. But what I was most fascinated about was the courage it must have taken you to write to every single employee in Japan and say, I was wrong. I've never heard a CEO do this.
Thank you for your time. Really love talking to you, Ashutosh.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.